Blog Talk Radio.
And we are live with End Zone and Falcon Zone Super Hour. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker. How are we doing today, fellas?
Doing great, Jeremy.
Doing good, Jeremy. How you doing?
Doing spectacular. There is so much we need to cover and get into, so let's just jump right into it. The biggest story today, of course, was out of Washington, and that's where the U.S. Patent Office has canceled the trademarks of the Washington Redskins. Now, the Redskins have appealed, but as we were speaking before the show, Reggie, I believe this has happened once before, hasn't it?
Yeah, it happened once, I recall, back in 92, and you mentioned that I believe it was 2003 that this same judgment came down, and it actually ended up being overturned. So I kind of expect something similar to happen, but we'll see. I mean, there's been a lot of pressure on this situation here over the past couple of months.
Yeah, and I mean, this, if it's just going to happen every 10 years, then it seems like it's never going to gain enough steam. But once again, this is just right back in the debate as to people getting offended by the Redskins name, and people have been calling into radio stations and stuff all day long with different ideas of things you could rename the team. But, I mean, I don't understand if this thing is ever going to blow over.
No, I think at the end of the day, realistically, Daniel Snyder's got to cut the right check, and it'll all go away again. So, there are some people, obviously, that are very much offended by it and have been for some time, and it's a justifiable argument and complaint. I just don't ever see it really going anywhere with as much as the NFL has invested just in that name alone and with all the trademarks and apparel and, you know, this could touch a lot of different areas.
Yeah, definitely so. And given all the experience with different teams and in and out of all these organizations, Coach, from kind of a organization standpoint, what does Snyder need to do to get past this?
Well, one of the things that I think that he needs to take in consideration is reaching out to the people that it's offending the most. By far, I think, you know, traveling to some of the reservations, talking to some of the people who are really impacted by this will help at least smooth some of that. I don't know if it will really make it go away. But I think getting an understanding on how it makes them feel from that position would help at least bring and or shed some light on to where the situation is right now and where it really stands.
Yeah, I don't think this thing is going to – I mean, it may happen every 10 years, but I think like you guys are saying, there's a lot of things that Snyder can do to kind of keep the ball rolling or maybe get this to go away. But as far as I know, Mr. Snyder's bank account has a lot more zeros and commas in it than mine does. So more than likely somebody will get paid off and this will just blow away.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that right now money – most definitely helps make the situation durable. But over time, again, I don't think the money runs out. I think it's an issue of how do you really want to handle this over the long-term effect. I do agree with what Mr. Walker said earlier that the trademark and the naming and all the investment that has gone in behind the naming of that team, because they don't just have happily named teams. They really put a lot behind it and market it from that point forward. But, fast forward in another 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you know, is it something that people are going to want to, you know, continue to debate, or will they finally come to the conclusion, since they have already somewhat revoked, in a sense, you know, the trademark, what do you do with that now because someone else could pick that up, I guess, in some type of form or fashion, maybe that's not around the NFL, and it creates a big problem for them there as well.
Yeah, it definitely does. And for the sake of the game, I think, I hope this passes on just as soon as it can. But on to the next big thing we want to talk about, and that's Marshawn Lynch is trying to get paid a little more. He feels like he's won a Super Bowl now, and he was a very integral part of all this. And his kind of threat is not to hold out of training camp so much, but he's kind of saying maybe he would retire if he didn't get a little more money. Is the Sultan of Skittles worth a little more money?
Well, one of the things you have to look at is what he still has on the table now. He has about $10.5 million left in a two-year deal, five of it being paid this year and 5.5 next year for 2015. With that being said, I think that Mr. Lynch most definitely needs to look at what Seattle has already done for him. I mean, he came out of a trade in 2010. Coach Carroll liked what he saw in him. He gave him an opportunity there. He was the featured back. He got an extension for $30 million on 4 years. He's had a nice contract put before him. Now, at this point, this is part of the problem that you run into when you are a Super Bowl-winning team. Everybody now at this point feels that they should be given something. Now, everyone has earned something, but how you distribute that earnings moving forward is the question. I hope that he also takes in consideration he's 28 years old. How much is left really in the tank? You know, if they go and try to extend again or if they balloon the contract with a small extension, that's going to be something else that he runs into. So he needs to take that into consideration.
Yeah, one of the interesting points that I heard about and read across this, and Coach, I know you and I have had some conversations about this with some other players, his perspective being, hey, I know that I'm coming to the end of my contract. I'm getting up there in age. If I take the gamble, go free agent, I'm not going to command the kind of dollars that I'm getting now or that I can demand now. So let me roll the dice and try to get all that I can right now. And I mean, from a fan's perspective or from the other side of the coin, I can't blame him for going in. He has definitely contributed quite a bit to the stability of that offense. He's taken a lot of pressure off of Russell Wilson and just the entire offense in general. And I think he's worth it. I mean, I think they should give him something in return for you know, the fact that he actually helped propel them to where they're at now.
Yeah, he was a major part in making this offense work. He's always been a just bruiser, you know, Jerome Bettis-like, just downhill runner. He's so hard to tackle, you know, kind of the way Jamal Anderson did for the Falcons a couple years here. He just keeps his legs moving. He's so hard to take down that, I mean, they should try to, you know, maybe help him out with an endorsement or some sort of little kickback, maybe a tack on another year to his current deal just to make him feel like he was as big a part as he was.
Right, and I think that would suffice for him. I mean, the guy doesn't want to go anywhere. He loves where he's at. He's loved by the fans. As a matter of fact, I think he did draw an endorsement deal with Skittles, surprisingly enough.
I would hope so.
right. So, I mean, I he doesn't want to go anywhere. He's just looking out for his long-term future. He knows what's coming. The end of the road is near. He knows it.
Yeah,
I don't think he wants to go anywhere. I'm sorry, Jim. I don't think he wants to go anywhere at all. I think that once you come out something like that and you see what you have special in that team, and it just spoke volumes to even with the Madden cover. It says a lot about what they have developed, what they have built, and what they want down the stretch. I think they're in position to do it again within another 2 years before his contract is out.
Yeah, definitely so. And I do think – I am glad he got that Skittles thing there because it kind of become such a connection to the fans, and especially with that 12th man up there in Seattle, that it gave another connection between the fans and the team. And that place up there is just a real special place to watch a game.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever had the pleasure of being in. So, yeah, it is a nice place to visit and a good, great place to watch a game.
As we move on, you know, I hate to play downer as we've talked about so many good things on here, but we were saddened with the news last week that Hall of Fame coach and arguably one of the best ever, Chuck Knoll, passed away last week. And, you know, the longtime Steeler coach, I believe he has the most Super Bowl wins with four as any head coach in NFL history, Hall of Famer as of 93. A lot of people didn't realize he actually played for a good while. A lot of people thought he was just the coach that didn't remember that. But, you know, what did Chuck Knoll mean to you guys?
Well, to me, from a coaching perspective, by far, being able to move from a player to a coach and developing what the Steelers have been able to do and the precedence of what it stands for to be a Steeler says a lot about what Coach Knoll stood for. I think he is one of those legendary guys that you don't see anymore with the philosophies. But, you know, again, you know, it's a loss to the Steeler nation as a whole to, you know, when you lose a coach like that. I mean, the Steelers would be just like the boys to the Steelers, you know, as Coach LeBeau. So you have this element that they just represent as being a part of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right, and from a fan's perspective, I mean, we all kind of grew up before I got into my team of choice. You know, I was a Steelers guy, so and that's one of the guys that I remember the most. And those teams that he coached are the teams that I remember the most. So to echo Coach Hill's statements, I mean, guys like that just they aren't around anymore. And those types of guys, the Tom Landrys, the Chuck Knowles, the Dan Reeves. I mean, that's when football was, you know, was really at a different level. Even now, I mean, the guys are more athletic now, but just the philosophies that he had and what he stood for, what that team stood for, along with Mr. Rooney up there. So he's definitely going to be missed.
And, you know, as we always say on the show, for the fans and everything, it's always a good idea to tune in to us because you never know who may call in. I believe we have a special guest that's on the line here. Who
Hello?
Am I speaking with?
Sammy Walker.
Former Steeler.
Hello?
Sammy Walker.
Yes.
How are you doing today, Mr. Walker?
I'm doing well, and I think that I love you guys' show.
Appreciate
good friends
it.
With good friends with Haywood, and I've been trying to get to this show for a while now. I like the venue and menu that you guys have.
We definitely appreciate it, and we appreciate the fact you got to come on with us. You know, especially being a former Steeler and being a part of that great organization, what does Chuck Knoll mean to you?
Chuck Knoll, I try to put it into, you know, one word, but I can only think of two. He had two things that I really liked in a coach. Respect. I respected him because he respected the game, and honesty. And I had a coach that came in after him that wasn't very honest, and that would be different. I played for a bunch of teams, and all the great coaches had those qualities, and Chuck Knoll had that in spades. I mean, the guy was is kind of like a father figure to you. You respected him, and he told you if he didn't like you. He told you if he didn't like the way you played, he would just tell you straight up. And all his players will tell you that's what they wanted. They wanted to hear that. They wanted to hear if they played bad. They wanted to hear, kind of like with your mom or dad, you want to hear when you've done wrong or if you've done good. He would do both. And he ran his team with an iron fist. You know, they talk about the iron curtain. He ran his team with an iron fist. It was this way. My first day on the team, after I signed my contract, he cut a guy right in front of me.
Wow.
So I don't know if that was to show me. So he said I was one of the first guys to hold out on him in like a couple of years. I'd only held out like 3 days. And he cut a guy who bent over to make a tackle. It looked like he didn't know what he was doing. He started screaming, Donahue, Donahue. And Donahue could run over. He said, if this guy's on the field for the second practice, both of y'all will go. cut the guy right there. I was like, whoa. I mean, that's when you could do that kind of stuff. I mean, but Chuck Noll believed in having the best athletes, and he liked thinkers because he was a thinker. I don't know if he could have coached in today's environment because of all the, you know, nerds. I hate to call them nerds and geeks, but all the guys that, you know, pull up Peyton Manning, every film where he touched his head, winked or whatever, and then, you know, like he got done wrong in, against Seattle. You got everything looked up, and every player can look at everything on the field. So, you know, players are actually smarter now, not just bigger, stronger, faster. They're smarter. They can see everything they want to see, every play that they ever had on the field. And Chuck Noll was more of a field guy. He was smart, and he ran good plays, and he got good coaches around him. But he would know when to run something. He would know when to do stuff because of my feel. And I coached with Haywood. Haywood had some of those qualities when we were coaching arena ball. Kind of passed them down to me. I was more of an emotional guy, feel guy. Haywood would think it out during the games. But Chuck Noll, respect, honesty, and felt it out. That was one of his things. He was one of those guys.
And I think I've been trying to kind of come up with a term as well because – the way the fan environment has kind of evolved, kind of the super fans or the statisticians, kind of pro wrestling kind of saw this couple years as well. The people that pay attention to a lot of the behind the scenes knowledge as well, but they definitely are shaping this game to where I think Chuck Noll would get very frustrated as a coach.
Well, I actually went over to the Steelers Stadium and they have little notebooks, and they with a flick of a finger, you can watch every third down play that one player or one quarterback did. Third down and 7 on the 50. You can watch every last one of them with just a tap of your finger. You had to go through hours and hours of film back in a day to do that, just to get to that. And you had to have, you know, you had people that sat down and gave you books of plays and things that you had, like third down and 7, 70% chance it's going to be a hitch route. Well, they got it, and they could see it. And you can, and they'll run it in practice, and they'll show you in practice running that play. I mean, the guys now have so many advantages and disadvantages. That's why I kind of wish that they wouldn't give them 2 weeks on the Super Bowl. I wish they wouldn't give them 2 weeks for a Super Bowl. I think they have too much time to figure each other out, and then it's not a chess match anymore. It's just who was able to watch the most film. I mean, I've always thought this. When's the last time you've seen a really exciting Super Bowl?
It's a good point. And I definitely agree with you there. I've never understood the 2 week break. It feels like all you're doing is allowing everybody to get super healthy and, like you said, to watch as much film as they can get away with. And I mean, I guess we could petition Roger Goodell, but as far as I know, he hasn't returned any of our emails yet. So we'll have to just keep hoping and praying on that.
And as you know, you talk about Goodell, that guy. I didn't know he was making $47 million a year.
Yeah, he's making A-Rod money.
A year?
Yeah, he's making A-Rod money.
I mean, he's been making that for, like, what they said, the last 5 years or so. I mean, the NFL is not going broke. So, and I listened to your conversation earlier about the Redskins, and I just want to throw 2 cents in on that before I continue on Chuck Noll, is – if they had a team called the Spear Chunkers, the Penny Pinches, and there's a couple other really offensive names that I could use, but I'm just not going to use them. If they had that name would have been gone a long time ago. But because it was kind of been accepted and nobody really said anything or nobody knew it was that offensive to people, then as soon as it became offensive, it should go away. There's been names that have gone away in college and high school. It should go away. The NFL doesn't want to do it. They can talk about trademarks and money all they want. It's all on one guy, Schneider. If he doesn't want to lose the name, it's not going anyway. I mean, like Daniel Sterling said some offensive things, I still don't think he should have lost his team. He's just a crazy old guy who got on the phone and said some stupid things. Shouldn't have lost his team. Do you think the only thing that would hurt an NFL team is if they lose money? Daniel Schneider is not going to lose any money from anybody just griping, because he just, like you guys said, he'll just wait for the storm to blow over, and then he'll just wait, and then he'll just go on about business the way he's been doing it. He's just waiting right now. I mean, like, what's his name? Mark Cuban. Whenever he would say something stupid, he would just wait for the storm to blow over, shut up for a little bit, and then just keep on rolling. They don't care. As long as they're not getting hurt in the pocket, nobody cares.
Well, Mr. Walker, this is Reggie Walker. To that point, I got a question just on that statement you just – or your point. What would it mean to players like yourself who came, you know, the legendary players that played when this thing really meant a lot more to you guys? What would it mean for something like this to happen? I mean, would it disturb the legacy of that team? Would it disturb the legacy of that era for you guys? Or do you feel like most of the older players feel exactly the same way you do?
Most of the players, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, you give me enough money, I'll play for the Klan. So that doesn't really matter to players. We play with it because we don't really know the owners. We don't know their mindset. We don't know how they think. And all we know is we're getting a check. I mean, if any player wanted to sit down and talk to the owners and try to find out what kind of player they were, nobody cares. Cause as long as I'm getting that check, I don't really care. As long as I go to the playoffs and Super Bowls and all that, I don't really care how the owners think. I mean, because that's them. They have their own choice. They're going to think the way they think anyway. I mean, regardless of what I think, they're rich. You know, Chris Rock said it best. Players are rich. The owners are wealthy. I mean, so it doesn't really matter. We could talk. You could talk all day. And unless a player got a bunch of other players to sit up and not play because they couldn't play for a racist team like that. Or a racist name like that, that'd be the only way, or get the fans to go with them. It'd be the only way you can get somebody who's rich and cocky to change the name. Otherwise, there's nothing anybody can do except we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. But he's sitting up there with, like you guys said earlier, with a lot of commas on the other side of zeros, and none of us can do anything. I mean, the only guy that could have maybe got him to change his mind is Johnny Cochran, because Johnny Cochran will sue the crap out of anybody. That's about it. Nobody – I would love to see them do different things. And then I also read that Daniel Snyder – I know this is funny. Daniel Snyder's been giving money to Indians – not Indians, I'm sorry, Native Americans. He's been giving money to Native Americans. I mean, not like a little bit, millions to Native American funds, you know, to kind of cover up the name. And I guess I read in the USA that, you know, you give me back my money, I might think about changing the name. But he's been given millions, so I think he thinks he's bought them off. So, I mean, you guys have mentioned it. You guys have done a great job of talking about it. But, you know, it's like talking about Democrats and Republicans if they'll change the two-party system. Nothing's going to happen with that either.
Yeah, exactly. Right. A couple of the other things we're about to hit on, we'll let you weigh in on them as well. As you said, Chuck Noll wasn't really known for having people hold out on him for any reason, really, all that much. But, you know, we have a couple cases with some star athletes that are holding out for different reasons right now. As 49ers tight end Vernon Davis is currently holding out and not playing in many camps. For money reasons, and Andre Johnson is skipping mandatory camp, not because of money, but because of a lack of a good quarterback. I mean, that really
well,
wasn't
out of all those people. I'm sorry. Out of all those people, the only one that's got a legitimate complaint is Andre Johnson. The rest of those guys, their agents are stupid. You're supposed to keep that to yourself and work out a deal underneath the thing. That way you're not trying to guilt the team into it. There's so many bad agents out there ruining the game that it's pitiful. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, okay, look, every guy, especially a running back, knows their career could end at any time. They should get as much money as they can while they can. I understand that, but they just gave you more money. Just because your agent didn't get you enough money the first time doesn't mean you get to scream and holler every time something good happens for the team. That's not the way it works. We can't take our toys just because we didn't like the way somebody was playing. If you didn't play well, are they allowed to take money from you? No.
That would be interesting.
So why would a player all of a sudden, when things are going good, all of a sudden just do this? You sign for money. Now, like I said, I am all for getting as much money as you can. I'm all for that. But you signed a contract, and if your agent didn't do well that time, it's not the team's fault. Your agent was supposed to get you more money. He was supposed to get you more money. And then people never think about this part. You're getting more money. You're getting more money. Every time one of these big guys get a big contract, they cut how many guys? Nobody talks about that. They'll cut three or four guys over mid-level players. They pay that one guy to fit under the cap.
It's so very true. A lot of these guys get washed out.
A lot of these times you hear about guys, you're like, where'd this guy go? Nobody knows because they got rid of him because they had to pay a quarterback, a receiver, a running back, or some expensive defensive end or linebacker or somebody. They'll pay one guy. And a statistic that people don't understand, and I talked to Haywood a lot about this, is 26% of the guys make 70% of the money. So when the 26 start getting fighting between each other how much money they're going to get, they just start cutting more guys. Then you wonder why, like Baltimore, you give Falco $20 million, where is the rest of the team going to get make?
Right, and that was the point I was going to make, Jeremy. I think we talked about this before. With the emergence of these monster contracts being given to these quarterbacks, and we talked even about Kaepernick's contract here recently, which I think has a lot to do with why Vernon is doing what he's doing. But how much more of this are you going to see? I mean, even in Seattle, Marshawn Lynch is just jumping the gun because he knows that Russell Wilson's in line for a bigger contract than what Kaepernick got. So is it? I mean, is that now going to become the trend? Now is what it's appearing to be.
I'd like to add to that, gentlemen. I think that you're 100% right. We covered a segment over this, and one of the things that I spoke on was that a lot of times players will price themselves out of the league, and you're starting to see that now as you go for these bigger contracts and you start getting to the meat of those contracts and you have to start looking at renegotiations and what are you going to do with it. At that point, other teams cannot pick you up because they've done the same thing and trying to satisfy too many players too fast.
Yeah, I always said that they should pay every player the same, and then they should all fight for incentives to get the extra money. If you're a top-five quarterback, you'll make top-five money. If you're not, then you won't. I've always thought that. When I was in the league, we were going to vote on it, and then our Players Association, and I'm not going to get mean and nasty like I normally do when I talk about the Players Association, but the Players Association – started making a couple of rules that hurt us in negotiation. One was we had one player represent the whole team, and that player was usually rich and popular, and he did not represent most of the team. And that's when they had the free agency, and then all the big-time players wanted that same free agency that the mid-level players could get. And then that's when it blew up, and it's been that way ever since. The team doesn't care how they divvy up the money. They just know that they're going to do with this much certain amount of money. That's why the NFL doesn't go broke. That's why they make so much money, and that's why they don't care. They know if you give Kaepernick, whoever, $20 million, it's coming from the smaller guys. It's coming from a guy like, say you had a kicker on team 15 years, and he's due for another contract, and he's supposed to get $3 million, a measly little $3 million. Well, guess what? He can't get it because you just gave somebody $20 million. You know, so he's gone and he's gone somewhere else. And everybody, fans scream about loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. There's no loyalty now because you can get cut because they had to pay some guy. And like I said, you guys are doing a great job of this. Marshawn Lynch knows that he's going to have to pay Russell. So his agent is trying to beat everybody to the punch. Sorry, you already signed a contract. Deal with it. Live with it. You know, if you can sign like you guys have been saying, you can sign an endorsement deal with somebody like Deion did with the Cowboys. I mean, his contract wasn't that big, but Pepsi paid him what, $10 million. If you can work something like that out, that's more power to you. But once you sign a contract, you sign a contract. I think I wish you guys would quit crying. I wish his agents would quit trying to make more money off of it. Because if I'm an agent, guess what I'm trying to do every time I turn around. I'm trying to get this guy re-signed because guess what's happening for me? I'm getting paid 10-15% of whatever that is. So $5 million, 10-15%. Guess what? I'm working hard for it.
Well, that's kind of one of the things too. I wanted to throw out there to both you and you, Mr. Walker, and Coach Hill, because you guys know this side of it. I've often wondered why the Players Association did not take more of an incentive or an approach to more money management. I mean, I know you can't control a guy's pockets, but I'll throw somebody out there real quick that I think did an excellent job in being able to negotiate just his career because of his money management, and that was Carson Palmer. When Carson Palmer
yes.
got cut from the Bengals, he had the choice of going wherever he wanted to go, and it didn't matter who he got with because he had saved the majority of the money that he had already, you know, made off the Bengals. So I just wonder why the Players Association doesn't take more of an initiative to start training these guys in money management issues.
Well, I'll start first because Haywood Hill had some of the best things he told me he's helped players with just little bits of money that we coached in the Arena Football League. But as for me, myself, in the NFL, you cannot give me a big credit card and and be 21, 22 years of age with I don't care if I went to church every day, but I'm 22, 23 years old. I got a credit card with a nice limit on it. It's hard. It's hard not to keep up with the Joneses. It's hard not to buy anything that your little heart desires. You have to have good people around you. Like you said, Carson Palmer had good people around him. You know, everybody seen that show on ESPN, 30 for 30, you know, broken guys going broke. Well, you get the wrong people around you, you go broke real fast. And money doesn't go as fast as you think once they take 38% out of it from the government. I mean, and if you really want to talk about it, most of the time your family hits you up more than anything. And then if your family isn't hitting you up, the government's hitting you up. And then if the government's not hitting you up, your own little spending sprees hit you up. And you don't realize it has to last a long time. You're making more than most people make in 10 years, but if you spend more than most people make in 10 years, it's going to be gone quick. And I got lucky, started doing some good things, but mostly, and I stress this, you're 22, you're invincible, and you think your bank account is too.
Yeah, I agree. I think it always surrounding a good team. Your team starts with the people that are around you first before you ever actually go out and play a game. Because if you don't know money management and you don't have the good people around you that will tell you, no, don't spend any money on that, this is what happens to 95% of those athletes. They get into bad investments. They want to invest, but they don't know how to invest. So if you're not used to having that type of money, then you most definitely need to surround yourself with a good team of people that know how to handle that kind of money, or at least a person who's trying to save you some money, and that plays a key role in it each and every time, in my opinion.
Oh, I was on the Packer team that had, like, maybe five guys that had invested in Merrill Lynch. I think Vonnie Holiday was one of them when I was on that team. And he lost, at that time, through Merrill Lynch, the guy stole money from, like five players on our team, and altogether, like, 26 players. And I think he stole like $50 million from these 26 players. I mean, y'all could Google it. It was Vonnie Holiday. He lost a ton of money on this, and it wasn't his fault. He put it in a renowned company, and this guy just cheated everybody and ran off to South America. And it's not the first time. I remember Kareem Abdul-Jabbar having the same problem with guys.
Oh, that's all right. We are right up against a break. Mr. Sammy Walker, it is a pleasure to get to talk to you like this, and we invite you to come back on at any time, and appreciate you calling in.
All right, thank you. I'm sorry I got to talking too much.
It's quite all right. And on the other side of the break, we will be getting into all the crazy things going on in Falcon World. But for Coach Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker, we'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great foods and more. And that's right, Falcons on top. That's the way we believe it, at least here at Falcon Zone. We welcome you back from the break. Once again, I am joined by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and, of course, everybody's favorite Atlanta superfan, Mr. Reggie Walker.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. You know, it was good talking to Sammy Walker on the last part of the hour there, especially about Chuck Knoll and everything. But as we transition from one exceptional coach to one that could be. Let's get into Coach Smith. As I was fortunate enough to go to the Grilling with the Falcons event last weekend, where I was able to that was presented by the Home Depot. Want to make sure they get their plug in there. But I got the opportunity to meet over 20 players and kind of hang out with them, and got to talk to Coach Smith as well. And overall, it was just a great experience to be able to get around those guys. And, you know, we had just been saying a couple of weeks back that there was that connection missing between the fans and the players and everything. But, I mean, it seems like between that and the announcement that we'll get to a little later on about them being on Hard Knocks, they're kind of bridging that gap.
Yeah, one of the things, and we talked about this on some other shows previous, you know, you got that $1 billion stadium coming, and you got to start doing more to get that 12th man environment similar to what's up in Seattle, because that's how you're going to fill it. So I'm glad to see that they're starting to do more events like this, because the fans really want to get more involved, and they're the ones that are going to spend the money.
Oh, I agree 100%. I think it was a great move on the Falcons' part to now have their organization become a little more personable with their fans. I think more events like that will give them that opportunity so that the fan base can really reach out and feel that they are really a part of what the Falcons are doing with that organization right now.
Well, speaking of Coach Smith, he went on record this week, and, you know, during all these camps, we kind of get the same cookie-cutter answers of, oh, this guy's development and this guy's progression and everything's going well and everything. But Coach Smith did say that he believes Matt Ryan is a coach on the field. I kind of see Matt Ryan as maybe a game manager nowadays, and, you know, clearly slightly better than some of the other ones in the league. But how do you guys see Matt Ryan?
Well, from a fan's perspective, I mean, obviously there is a lot of allegiance to Matt Ryan for fans like myself coming out of the whole thing with Mike Vick and kind of that lull that we had. However, and Coach Hill and I have talked about this, and I'm sure he'll bring it up. I personally, as a fan, and a lot of fans, want to see Matt Ryan go back to that Matt Ryan that initially started with the Falcons, where he was fearless. He seemed to be really into let me do what it takes to get it done, and as opposed to maybe taking more of the conservative route, which I think has a lot to do with maybe how he's coached sometimes. But I think a lot of us want to see him definitely become that coach on the field, or just more than that game manager, more like a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or whomever, some of the more elite quarterbacks that just take a game over. And I'm hoping that we'll get to see more of that this year out of him.
I think that you will. I think the fact that they have this new facility, I think with a huge contract, I think there's just pressure now. And that pressure is to perform. That pressure is to become that leader. Right now, from a coach's perspective, I see him as a game manager. I do see him as that. Do I feel that he can become and emerge to that leader? He's going to have to do it this year, because if not, you're not going to be able to justify the money. There could easily be some respect lost amongst his teammates because of the contract. So he has a lot on his plate this year. And so I think that this year is the year that you're going to go back to seeing him being a little more – he's going to become boisterous. He's going to be, you know, more animated. He's going to be more of an exciting player this year than probably the Falcons have ever seen before.
And, you know, maybe this was Coach Smith trying to motivate Matt Ryan in a certain area that maybe we don't even know about. You know, maybe just some kind of motivation or a way to pick up his spirits or something. And to me, the Falcons have that's not the only motivation they're trying to do. They did sign a kicker the other day, Sergio Castillo. And to me, all I see this as is a way to push Matt Bryant to kind of up his game a little bit, because I feel like he's taking a step back, or, you know, they're already showing that there's another guy behind him.
Well, I kind of beg to differ on that. I don't know how much more Matt Bryant could have done for us when put in situations, especially when we've needed him to make that clutch kick. I can maybe only think of one or two instances where he may have chipped it wide or what have you. But for the most part, I think Matt Bryant's been kind of sturdy. Maybe money is coming into play and a contract extension is upcoming or what have you, and they're trying to, you know, continue this approach of getting younger as opposed to continuing to hold on to some of the older veterans. So I don't know. Maybe that plays a role in it.
Yeah, I think it's just competition. I think that with where the Falcons want to go moving forward, that there's no position that can just clearly be called safe. And with that being the case, you know, that's one of those positions that can kind of get lost in the shuffle. And with that, I think it's just competition coming in just to make sure that he's aware that, you know, the position is still a position that is something that can be actually negotiated or replaced. No one's really kind of safe.
Right, and I was lucky enough, Matt Bryant was one of the guys that I met on Saturday, and I actually, even though it was kind of hard to get to some of the players at certain times, there was various other appearances they were making in interviews, I was able to kind of chat with Matt Bryant for a little while because I did follow the Buccaneers for many years, and I brought up a story of I got to see a game in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, and during warmups, I watched Matt Bryant kick field goals and hit the pirate ship down there. And it's a good distance past the goalpost and everything. And when I brought up the story to him, he just kind of grinned and kind of let it be known that he didn't necessarily enjoy destroying property, but he tried up every chance he got.
Right, and that's that competitive nature that I, from a fan perspective, and a lot of fans that I've spoken to, we even read some stuff today where Mike Smith had to cut practice short because Sam Baker and Stanley Mponga got into it, and there's been kind of a lot of chippiness going on, and now you're starting to see the attitudes of your Mike Tyson, your Brian Cox starting to show up in the players, and that aggression that we've talked about and we've discussed. So I actually like to know, you know, that players actually have that mentality, because for so long Atlanta has appeared to be this team on the sidelines, you know, more in a three-piece suit than in a football uniform sometimes. So I'm glad to hear that story.
Yeah, and I
agree.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. I agree that, you know, you need some of that in camp. You need to find out where the mental toughness may be. And taking into consideration that Mr. Baker's been out, now he's faced with some competition and young competition and hungry competition and guys that are moving from the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball. So there's a lot of things that are in the mix right now. And this mini camp, if this is any indicator of what training camp is going to look like, watch out. The Falcons are going to be a very gritty team.
Yeah, and as we kind of transition from one guy trying to up his game or kind of emerging as a different player, I want to quickly get into Paul Werlow, who made the comment earlier this week. To him, it's all about the wins. And we'll kind of take this from two different perspectives. First, from the team perspective and then the fan perspective. But as far as the team and the organization is concerned, is it all about the wins or are there other things that it's about this year?
Absolutely, it's about the wins. As a coach, our jobs are based on performance. That is 100% a performance-based occupation. And I think Al Davis said it best, just win, baby, win. Winning makes everything better. It hides some things that you don't want to necessarily deal with because winning can cover that up. So by far, winning is always what you're expecting, and owners are expecting you to win. Given a given point, let's look at the New England Patriots this past year. I mean, they did not play with all of their personnel. They lost personnel due to injury and various off-the-field issues. However, at the end of the day, Mr. Kraft wanted them to win, and they produced games, and they won. So there's your blueprint for why it's important to win.
Right, and from a fan's perspective, I mean, absolutely it's about the wins. I mean, no fan wants to see their team lose at any given point. I think for a lot of us, at least those like myself, sometimes it's about the nature of that win or that loss, for that matter. I want to see a team that cares so much about winning or doing the right thing that they do what it takes. I want to see that team that'll do whatever it takes. If it means taking a guy's head off, that's what you do. If a guy jumps on Matt Ryan, I want to see the whole team come off the field. I mean, those are the types of things from a fan perspective. We know it's not realistic, and penalties and fines and things of that nature kind of shut a lot of that down. But to Mr. Werlow's point, win, but we also want to see the effort. I mean, how great is it to be, or is it to be a Seattle fan, for instance, where you know that team is representing exactly everything that you're feeling and emotion and all of that at the same time, and that's got to be a great place to play and a great place to be a fan.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as we've said, from the team perspective, it is all about the wins, and especially from the coaching and organization. But as far as the fans this year, especially the Falcons fans, I mean, are the fans going to be okay if they get, you know, 10, 11, 12 wins, or do they need to go deeper for it to mean something to the fans?
Well, for me, I need to see more. I need to see a commitment to – I mean, we've gotten to this point. I mean, we sat in mediocrity for so long, and then we finally got the back-to-back wins, and we finally got the one playoff win, and we got to the NFC Championship. But to come 10 yards from a Super Bowl and then to end up 4-12 the next year, it was a kick in the face. So we've got to see more. I mean, I know that – you know, you have to be realistic. But reality for us is it is at some point the tide has got to turn for us, and especially if you're going to continue to ask me to pay $2,000 for a season ticket.
Well, I don't disagree. I think that, you know, most definitely they need to go deeper. But I think right now they're moving in the right direction, being that they went into the draft very aggressive. They did a lot of things in the free agency market. To be aggressive. I think it's going to still take this year to put that together, and that's why I'm predicting a 10-6 to an 11-5 season for them. But I think from a, you know, as Mr. Walker was speaking on the realistic side, that's where it has to be at least this year. You have to justify all of these moves with correcting what happened last year with the season. So I think, you know, 10-6, 11-5 season, yes, it's not the Super Bowl. No, it's not promising an NFC, you know, conference championship game, but it is giving you an opportunity to position yourself, and I think now they just need to put themselves in position.
Well, to your point, Coach Hill, and that's exactly the argument that we've had to hear as a fan for years now, is, oh, wait, we're moving in the right direction. We're doing the right things. Meanwhile, we've got teams that we despise around us winning Super Bowls. We've got the Saints who have a Super Bowl. We have the Bucks who have a Super Bowl. We have the Panthers who were probably closer on the verge of getting the Super Bowl than us sometimes. At some point, that argument no longer is justified, especially, again, in the wake of, and we always talk about the money issue. We've got PSLs possibly coming up as well as an increased ticket price. It's going to be tough if you give me a 10-5, a 10-6 season, barely making the playoffs out in the first round. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough. And I want to quickly try to get to this call real quick. I apologize. They've been on hold for a little while. Let's see here. Hello, you're on the Falcon Zone. Who am I speaking with? We will try again to get them back on. But, yeah, as you're saying, with those PSLs and things coming up, it's kind of a – not really a now or never, but it pretty much is a now or now thing that – this team needs to put up 10 or 11 wins this year, and if nothing else, a wild card and a deep playoff run.
Right, because the other competition that I've read about today that I didn't realize is that you've also got the Braves' new stadium opening up. I read an article where now the naming rights for these stadiums are now being put on the table now. I mean, again, you're already in a city where you've got fans from everywhere and people from all different places. So it's hard to keep that native fan interested in the local team. Atlanta's known as a bandwagon city, and that's the truth. You got some fans when we're winning, they're there. When you're not, we lost a lot of fans last year. But that's a tough market to sell a $1 billion stadium in if you don't have a Mike Vick caliber player or a high caliber coach or a Super Bowl championship. It's just. You can no longer preach mediocrity to the team, to the fan base anymore. Those days are gone.
Definitely. And speaking on ways of trying to help pay for that stadium and getting the things up, there was one event that triggered the big thing we'll close out with today, and that was Southward was signed, who was the, I believe, third-round holdout for a while. And almost 24 hours after he officially signed his rookie contract, and conveniently, right after me and Coach Hill had predicted that the Cardinals should take this, Hard Knocks, it was announced that the Atlanta Falcons will be on Hard Knocks this year.
Right, and I've actually gotten some mixed comments from the fan side of the thing. I tend to agree more with the fan that I don't particularly – I'm not a particular big fan of this particular move. I mean, I know that Atlanta has been asked several years. I mean, I understand the whole marketing side of this and the strategy behind getting bringing this event to Atlanta now. But I just think that you have so much to accomplish that this could be a distraction. And I'm hoping that it's not, but I tend to agree with a lot of the fan base. It's pretty much split down the middle. Some are great, some that love the accolades. Love it, but fans like myself think it's just going to be a distraction, or hope that it's not anyway.
I find it as an interesting move on the Falcons to do it at this particular point in time. I'd probably put them in the mix when they got ready to move into the new facility. That transition would help with the marketing, but it'd be interesting to see if it's going to be a distraction or if it's going to be something that's going to boost, players' confidence and whatnot, and just push them through the season.
Right, and as we're kind of pushed for time in the last few minutes of it here, we'll just kind of go around the room and, name one thing that you're looking forward to with Hard Knocks, or one player that you would like to see featured on there, and how that could be a great thing for the Falcons.
Well, I will start.
Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. I was going to say I would start with Roddy White. I think Roddy White is going to make this show or break this show. It's going to be very interesting to see some of the things, and unfiltered Roddy White, as you mentioned. I'm looking forward to that piece of it.
For myself, I like to see Warlow. I like to see what he's going to do with it, since he's taking a little more of a commanding role. He's you know, kind of being put in the forefront of a few things. So it'd be kind of interesting to see where he goes with it as one of the featured guys.
Right, and, you know, the way it typically works as far as the team, they like to pick a veteran that they follow about how they are at their stage of the career. So Roddy's probably that guy. They kind of pick one of the emerging guys, and I either thought that would be Tyler Starr or Paul Werlo. And then usually there's an offbeat story or there's somebody trying to make the team that you know, the struggles of trying to make a team like that. But, you know, I got to look at a guy like maybe Harry Douglas in this, because he kind of got a little bit of a taste of the limelight last year as having to step up with the injuries to Julio and Roddy. And, you know, somebody with such an outgoing personality as he's said to have, he could, him or a Matt Bryant could really shine in an arena like this.
Right, and I'll tell you another interesting one that I think is going to probably be a storyline as well is going to be Steven Jackson and Devontae Freeman. I think that veteran guy that may be coming to the end of his career, being pushed by that young rookie that everybody sees so much promise in, I think that's probably going to be a big storyline as well.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And honestly, if you throw in Jaquizz Rodgers and make it kind of a three-way dance there, the battle for the top two spots, or if they're the only two spots, in case they decide to drop or move one or the other, Jaquizz Rodgers could be on the outside looking in right now.
Absolutely, and that's some of the rumblings that's being said now, that he's going to be that guy that is going to be on the bubble come day one, and he's on the bubble now. They believe that much in Devontae Freeman, so it's going to be an interesting one, as well as seeing how Mike Tice and Brian Cox have changed the landscape of the coaching staff there. I think that's going to be interesting as well.
And as we get into these final couple minutes here, a quick little news and notes. We all know Jonathan Vilma was in the building earlier today in Flowery Branch, and I just got the update on the story that at least for right now, they did take a look at Vilma, but kind of as I predicted, and I think all of us have kind of said at some point on this show, right now they're going to pass maybe based off the condition of his knee, and they may reevaluate possibly signing him or somebody with similar talent and maybe better knees maybe during training camp.
Right, and also it's interesting to note that Brandon Flowers was another player that's actually being poked and prodded by the Falcons as well after having been cut by Kansas City, so that's going to be an interesting story to follow too.
Yeah, right, definitely. And been rumored that at one point the Falcons reached out and kind of gave him Brandon Flowers an offer, and then on the other side of the coin, they've also said that they didn't give a contract to. So we'll just kind of have to fill that out. But with Scott Pioli in, you never know how many different Kansas City Chiefs could actually come over. And the last thing I want to do before we do get out of here is like I said, I was able to meet Coach Smith and Brian Cox and a couple of the coaches as well. But there was one guy that just, you know, just really stood out to me, and I did want to give him a shout out. And that was Prince Shembo, who could be taking over Witherspoon's position. And like I said, as we're in the last couple seconds here, I just wanted to give a shout out to Prince Shembo. Had a short but great conversation with him, and by far he was as nice as everybody was all day long. He was one of the nicest guys all day long. Everybody was saying, it was like you've known this guy for 10 years. I mean, it was just hugging and, hey, how are you doing, and how are you having a good time and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, shout out to Prince Shembo, and good luck to you. That middle linebacker spot could be yours, but you got to reach up and grab it. But for Coach Haywood Hill and Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. This has been Falcon Zone. We'll see you next week.